Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
This player to center for Tate. He's got a breakaway. Tate to win the game. Marion Hossa. A singular effort. Third match
left.
What
a career
goal.
Crawford.
Call the cops.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager here at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. I've got all my line mates with me this evening as we continue our recap of the Blackhawks 2021-2022 season that was. So let's bring them all in without any further ado. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It's Shepherd Price.
Yo, what's up? Pete DeBoer's gone, so thank God for that. And also, I wrote the most freezing cold take I'll ever have, which is that Alex DeBrincat is very, very good at hockey.
Yeah, I mean, anything else you would elaborate on that with Alex DeBrincat being good at hockey? Like, he scores a lot of goals. I think the most surprising thing from reading through all that is it seems like the defensive side of things are gotten so much better that make him like he's so much more of an all-around player than he was when he first started.
Yeah, he's very decent in his own end, and that's a very good improvement.
Did you say very decent? Is that what?
Very decent. Yes. Very decent. He's a good penalty killer, but is he somebody you want to put in on the ice with in an empty net situation? Who knows?
By the way, have you updated your resume and sent it to Vegas to be their coach so you can get fired in a year
and get a lot of severance? No, unfortunately.
Well,
I'd rather be the front office anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I heard there's an opening. It seemed like it might be something you were interested in. I didn't know.
I have ideas for who should be the Vegas coaches. None of them are me.
The good news is we're going to shift to someone else so we don't talk about Vegas anymore.
or the Bucks who lost.
Oh, yeah. We're real sad for you. Also with us this evening, and he is the Second City Hockey, what Andrew McMahon is to something corporate. You can find him on Twitter at Mill182. It's Mill Savage.
That's a good one. I did not wake up in a car today, but you know what? Today's a great day. I found the LeBron chips finally. I've been looking for them for a while. The Flamin' Hot Cheddar and Sour Cream Ruffles. So I'm very excited to eat those later.
Wait. Flamin' Hot Cheddar and Sour Cream?
So he combined the two different ones into one chip. So they have like the NBA guys on all the different like Wild Ruffles flavors.
Okay.
And the LeBron ones have been advertised and they're the only ones I could never find. And I finally found them today. So, and also NHL is free on Game Pass finally by the second round of the playoffs. So I didn't pay $70 for that. So I'm going to be eating those and have some hockey to play where in that reality I'm in the NHL. So.
there were so many words at the start of those chips, the Flamin' Hot Cheddar and Sour Cream. Like, none of those words are bad. They're all good things, but I just was like, I had to like check off the list as we were working our way through it.
Yeah, it's a very busy title. But like, it's basically, I don't know if you guys have had the regular Ruffles that are just Flamin' Hot. They're kind of hard to find themselves, but they're really good. And they just like slap those bad boys together with the cheddar and sour cream and, hey, no playoffs for LeBron, but he makes a fine snack.
if you want a bright side of St. Louis, those Ruffles Flaming Hot are not hard to find here.
Yeah, they're hard to find. They're hard to find out here. Like the grocery stores don't have them. You have to go to like a gas station and get like a small bag, which is what I had to do with the LeBron ones. But that's okay. I don't need a big bag.
I might make a Costco run later, Mill. I'll let you know if they got them there. If you need a roughly a parachute sized bag full of those chips.
No, if you go to Costco, you got to get the like ginormous bag of pita chips and the 3-flavor hummus bucket.
that'll go in the cart as well. Also with us this evening, she's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR and is the Second City Hockey Bull and Wall of Text. It's Betsy.
I was trying to think of the last time I ate chips, like, that wasn't, like, came with a meal for a sandwich or something. You know, like, just went and bought a bag of chips at the store for a flavor. Usually, I only want my chips to, like, bring me guac. Like, I just need it for cheese and guac.
They're just a vessel of the condiments to you? That, yes. That's all they are for? Okay. We got to the food take very early this week. Chips are merely a vessel for, I don't know. I've been less of a chip guy. I used to be a big chip guy just because I feel like that was a staple of every childhood lunch. You get a sandwich, you get chips, and then you get like a cookie. Like, that's your lunch for like K through eighth grade. So...
Yep. I was when Mill was going through flavor, like talking about flavors, I was like, what is the last, like the French onion chips maybe was the last time. And that had been a while ago.
Well, that's the French onion dip is what you dip them in.
No. What's the one with the little specks in that?
The sour cream and onion?
Maybe sour cream and onion. I don't. Here you go. Everybody can now know.
Do they not have chips in the South? Like, what's going on here?
I mean, they do. My nephew gets those little hot twisty things. What are they? Oh my god!
The purple bag. Takis. There we go.
Yeah, he gets those. I've never had one though. But other than that, no, I don't. And scoops, tortilla scoops, so you can scoop more.
Oh yeah.
But that's pretty much it.
Okay.
I mean, like, I'm not a chip connoisseur. I just think in the year of 2022 with the flavors of chips and cereal and all that bizarre shit, I like to try the weird stuff, you know.
I love to try cereal. I love cereal. I can eat cereal.
There's a churro cereal.
Ooh. Spoiler, we could talk.
We'll get to that later.
Say no more. Yeah. Yeah. Those are two of my favorite things in one. So, hey, we're as we're discussing this evening, before we dive into the Blackhawks season recap, pretty insane opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs just ended. And I think this past weekend, with the combination of the NBA and the NHL Game 7s, and at least in the Chicagoland area, the weather was kind of perfect. I sat outside and for at least like 10 hours combined those 2 days watching Game 7s. And it was, gotta tell you, it was pretty lovely. Kind of bummed me out. It just was another reminder that, man, I remember when the Blackhawks used to be in things like this, and that was cool. But other than that, just a lot of fun watching the Stanley Cup playoffs and some of the NBA stuff as well. And just real quick, swinging around to the group, starting with Shay, any closing thoughts on the first round from the Stanley Cup playoffs?
God, what does Toronto have to do to win a fucking series, right?
Not bad.
two games they could have clinched against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. They couldn't do it either time.
Well, the hardest victory in any series is the fourth one, and against a team like Tampa, it's that is a tall mountain for anyone to climb. Like, I don't even think the Leafs were all that bad.
No, neither do I. They just need to score more than one goal in the seventh game of a series.
Yeah,
besides that, like, the Colorado Avalanche are just a team to be fucking trifled with.
Yeah, Kale McCarr is going to be a problem, like,
for a long time.
Like, I think we talked about this last week. I made the joke about maybe the Hawks just need to convince him to retire. But outside of that, like, it's kind of terrifying to watch him knowing he's going to be in the division for the next decade or whatever.
I think there's an argument he might be the best player in hockey.
Well, yeah, the way he played in those four games, he looked like the best hockey player on the planet. Connor McDavid did have his moments for sure in that LA Kings series. We'll see what happens to the next round for each of those teams as the quality of opponent ramps up a little bit. But yeah, that the Kale McCarr show was live and in living color in Nashville last week. Mill, what about you? Any playoff thoughts?
Yeah, it was, like you said, it was beautiful outside. It was like self-titled Sheryl Crow weather with tequila. That's how I describe it. You know, the thing that I am pissed off about is Jacob Trouba being a fucking asshole and getting no discipline.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that because I'm partial to the city of Pittsburgh. Like, he was just out there, like, injuring guys, and that's not cool.
Well, he was doing that in the regular season, too. Was he the one that knocked out Connor Murphy or was someone else?
I thought Kara.
He had Kara out in midair.
Yeah, and it's kind of like Nazem Kadri is going to do that, like, in 2 days.
He's due.
Yeah, by game two, he'll be suspended.
I think he's minding his manners this year.
I hope so. Because
he didn't have to do very much against Nashville to mind his manners, because that team was like, they just rolled over them. So you didn't need to be dirty there.
Right. The Blues are going to be a bit of a nuisance, but...
Are they, though?
Well, we'll see, but I've been wearing an Avs jersey around because my undying sustain for the Blues. And, go Avs and fuck the Wild. Battle of Alberta is exciting. I wish that the Oilers weren't wearing those awful uniforms, but...
Yeah, Battle of Alberta and Battle of Florida.
Yeah, Battle of Florida should be a good one.
Yeah, the Florida-Tampa series is going to be a good one. Betsy, what about you? Any of your observations or thoughts from the first round of the playoffs?
Well, I'm only really rooting for, like, two teams, and they're, like, playing each other, so I'm annoyed about that, because I only really like Carolina, and I was excited about them. I think they should have beat Boston sooner. I think they let Boston into the series a little bit too much. And the same thing with the Rangers. I know Pittsburgh was a good team, but, like, I think they allowed Pittsburgh to just dictate too much. And good news for Carolina then, because I think they could roll over. If the Rangers show up like they did against Pittsburgh, then yay, Carolina's going to make it.
I would say the Rangers are a really well-coached team, but they also fucking played three games against Louis Domingue.
Yeah.
And they only won that series because Crosby got hurt. Like, they had no answer for him, which...
maybe that was the answer.
Jake Gensel and Crosby and all... Yeah. The Penguins are, like, one of those teams where you watch their zone entries and you're just like, why can't the Hawks get their shit together?
Well... Good coaching.
Exactly. It's like,
oh God.
Those are two really well coached teams playing against each other, and I'm just like drooling over it.
Yeah, I mean, the Rangers played above what I think their players were actually capable of doing, partially because of how good their coaching was.
And how good their goaltending was.
And how great their goaltending was. What was the most disappointing series was the Wild losing to the Blues, because the Blues are not a good team. But
What do you think about the Wild, because they lost?
The Wild were better than the Blues in most of those games, in my opinion. They certainly were better. They had like 58 or 60% of the expected goal share overall in the series. But they had some stupid ass mistakes, like just some brain farts that the Blues just capitalized on. And honestly, Fleury didn't do well.
Yeah, I was going to say Fleury was bad in that series.
Yeah, he was the worst goaltender in the first round. And I don't think it was particularly close.
Well, and I think I feel like I said it a few times during the regular season that I still was trying to adjust to a world where the Minnesota Wild have like an exciting, actual talented hockey player on their team. But I guess I still don't have to adjust to a world where they're like a really grown up.
they won't disappoint their fans and make everybody else go, all right.
When's the last time a Wild player was on a commercial? He's on those haircut commercials.
Probably the first one ever, considering that's a relatively new team. Unless, I don't know, Ryan Suter or Parise got on when they signed.
They're boring.
I don't think Parise's like last time he was ever in like any type of marketing was back when they went to the Olympics in 2014.
So he was probably still in New Jersey at the time.
No, he was in...
No, that was like right after, like 2 years after.
Okay.
Didn't he go to the final in 12 with New Jersey and then he left?
Maybe.
I think he played in that final against the Kings and then he was a free agent that summer.
Yeah.
But the other thing that just has stood out to me or the other thing I noticed while this was going on, and I want to look up his name because I want to make sure I say it right because I feel like I didn't know, is who the hell is Nick Paul and where did Tampa
fight? Oh, Ottawa.
Yeah.
Ottawa. He's good. He's good.
Yeah. It's just I thought I had a decent handle on all the good players in Tampa, and then you watch game seven and Nick Paul scores two goals. Just out of left field.
Yeah, I covered one of those games against the Sens, and I was like, when he was still there, and I'm like, oh, this guy can actually play.
Yeah, I mean, look, so his production in Ottawa is the perfect example of how Tampa looks at underlying numbers to pick their players, because he had only like 18 or 19 points in 60-ish games in Ottawa, so like nothing to write home about, but all of his underlying microstats are beautiful. He goes to a Tampa, and he's not necessarily even playing up in their lineup that much. And he wasn't like a point per game. He had like 15 and 20 or 14 and 21 or something like that. And that's just what they do. They did it to Blake Coleman. Blake Coleman was a good player, but not a great player. It's what the Blackhawks did at one time with Johnny Oduya. Johnny Oduya was a very underrated, but statistically good guy on a bad team, and put him in the perfect situation. But, I need the Blackhawks to do that again. But yeah. Tampa has done it. Tampa has done it several years in a row. It's why the Brendan Hagel trade was interesting, because Brendan Hagel obviously had all kinds of good under micro stats, but we all knew he was shooting really at high.
22%.
I think though, like, also scouting in relation to like your system has a lot to do with that, because I know they look at the numbers, but like they can tell, like, okay, like this guy is gonna do good with us because we don't suck like the Sens or the Hawks.
Yeah.
But like, we could use this skill set or whatever. But Brandon Hagel was getting away with murder at 22%.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that the Nick Paul, like, becoming a game seven hero, I think that very specific thing, it kind of reminded me, I think the thing that I missed the most about the Hawks not being in the playoffs is one of my, like, I really, it's always fun when players that were kind of under the radar go into the postseason, and then in a big game they deliver and become, you know, that's how you become a legend with your team, is a big postseason performance. So like, the going way back to like the Dustin Byfuglien hat trick in against Vancouver in 2009.
I clipped that newspaper. I still have it.
Dave Bolin owning the Canucks on several occasions. Brian Bickle in all of 2013. Andrew Shaw had a bunch of moments. Like, just the guys, like the under the radar guys flourishing in big situations. That specific thing is what I miss. One of the things I miss the most about the Blackhawks not being in the playoffs.
To your point, Dave, I have the Ben Smith clip in the intro.
Playoff hero Ben Smith.
But we all, like, I mean, that was a freak out moment to stay alive. Like,
yeah. Well, yeah. And that, I feel like that's when players really cement legacies and become part of team lore. And because the Hawks haven't done that in 5 or 6 years, like, you know, we can sing the praises of Alex DeBrincat all we want, and he deserves them all. But he also, like, there's going to be something missing from any legacy he leaves in Chicago, just because there hasn't been any playoff games for him to play in. 2020s will hang an asterisk on it. So hey, while we're here on the top of the Blackhawks, we could want to talk a little bit about some of the defensemen from last season, kind of our season recap stuff. And there's a few guys that seem like they're on their way out the door that we probably don't need to get into too much. Calvin DeHaan seems like he's an unrestricted free agent. So it seems like he's on his way out, and tip of the cap. He was, you know, one of our favorite, I think the only Blackhawks player that followed us on Twitter. So
he's one of our guys.
He's one of our guys. So he's gone. Eric Gustafson seems like he's on his way out the door.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Caleb Jones, we're going to put a pin in that and maybe come back to it, because he's a restricted free agent and there's a discussion there. I guess.
No, there isn't.
Okay, maybe there's not.
There shouldn't be.
I guess I'm just gonna throw this over to Shea first, and is there a particular defenseman that you had a thought on, or in just something you wanted to share related to any of the Blackhawks defensemen from last season?
Jake McCabe. I think this is a good point to start, because I think everybody has Jake McCabe thoughts. Disappointing, because he had better numbers in Buffalo, and maybe that's because the coaching was better in Buffalo, and like, it just, like, there, it was, it took a lot of effort to adapt to the Chicago system, which may be an indictment of the Chicago system more than it is an indictment of Jake McCabe. But like you sign a guy for 4x4 because that's like what his contract is, right? You expect more. You expect more out of him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Than what they got out of McCabe, which was a solidly third pairing defenseman, if that, on any other team.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not a good year for old number six.
No, like nothing he did look great. Like none of his stats are good. His counting stats were bad. Just yikes. And that's coming from somebody who still stands Connor Murphy after the season Murphy had.
Yeah. Well, I think the interesting part with McCabe is, well, I guess the big question mark is he did come off a season ending injury in the prior season in 2021. So there, I guess if you're grasping for some dose of optimism, it's that maybe he needed this year to get the confidence back and just get the knee. Something with that knee is as the scapegoat for this is why he was bad, and next season he won't be as bad. I guess that's all I got for you.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully. Betsy, what about you? Any defensemen you want to chime in on? Or maybe pile in on the Jake McCabe discussion?
Well, yeah, he was frustrating because he has all the attributes to be a top four player and was in Buffalo. And I thought he was much better at the end of the season. Like, I thought he improved towards the end, mostly when he was playing with none of the guys he played with the rest of the year, when he was rotating with like Regula and Vlasic a little bit. I don't like he and Regula were playing together towards the end and they looked good together. So maybe that's the type of defender that he needs, somebody who can go out there and wheel and deal, and McCabe can be the guy that's stands there and does the like springboarding. There's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Like he's the more stay-at-home guy on a offense and defensive pairing.
He just really, really, really did not click with Seth Jones. And then he and Murphy did not look great together. And then even when they tried to play them off sides together with DeHaan, just no combination seemed to work. And I don't know if that was totally on him. But yeah, it was disappointing and frustrating to watch. He weirdly had some, like, was one of the better zone exit guys, which was interesting. But other guys, like I have such hope for the kids coming up that I'm sad to see DeHaan go, because I actually think he was probably the second best. I think Seth Jones is the best defenseman, and then I think DeHaan was probably the second best one, because Connor Murphy had a down year and McCabe was kind of trash, and then everybody else was kind of trash, right? Like,
I look up a lot, like, just kind of trash, not actual trash, but just kind of trash.
He had at least some, he had more redeeming qualities than I think any of the other guys did, but whatever. So I have such hope for the kids, and I don't know how they're going to treat next year, that I wouldn't even mind it just being wiped clean. I know that Caleb Jones and Riley Stillman are both youngish, but at the same time, I feel like they have maybe better potential in the system than either one of them, even though I think, I don't know, they maybe could be bottom pair guys and be fine.
Yeah, but Riley Stillman's going to be an interesting case because he got a 3-year extension. He's got 2 years left on that contract, but it's only like $1.5 million. And that was also, you know, under a entirely different regime. So there's no telling if the current regime believes he's as good as the prior regime did. So I guess we'll find out by the way they deal with him going forward. But swinging it around quickly to Mill, any players you wanted to chime in on while we were on the topic of Blackhawks D-men?
Yeah, I'll chime in real quick before a special message from our sponsors. to piggyback on what you said on McCabe, I do think the injury might have messed him up, because when you look at him, just like without trying to put too much thought into it, a lot of times he looked like he knew he was not where he was supposed to be, and he was trying to get there, and he just couldn't. A lot of times after a goal, he was on his face, like, you know, he looked like he did a Wrigleyville bar crawl. It was kind of embarrassing, but I don't want to hate on him. I mean, hopefully he could put it together. He just did not look very good. Obviously the numbers were not very good as well. And the other guy, I think, and I said this going into the season, I said, Seth Jones is a good player. He just is going to have to fight the contract and the trade, because you know, that's always going to be the enemy there. But he showed that his athletic ability is very, very, very top shelf. And I think in a good system with a real NHL coach, he could thrive. But even with the mess of the team that they, the coaching they had, he showed that he's a skilled guy, and it's a good anchor to have on that defense if all these young guys coming up can play.
Yeah, a guy that can move that well at that size is not that's not nothing. Like, and the fact that he plays 20 to 25 minutes every night is also pretty impressive. And if you look at all the, you know, I'm looking at all the natural stat trick stuff. I mean, the whole team's underwater because, you know, the possession stats were terrible, but Seth Jones is at least like above the team rate in like every category that exists. So,
well, yeah,
that, which would suggest that he was better than some of the dredges at the bottom.
I was going to say, just microstats wise, looks good. I mean, like, he did better than a lot of people thought he was going to do this year.
Yeah, I think he led the team in defensive X card too.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem with Jones, it's not really, this isn't his problem, is he can skate his way out of trouble, which is a great skill to have, but he needs a system so he doesn't have to skate his way out of trouble 25 minutes a night.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That
that's everybody's problem though, not just his. All the blue liners are just fucked with, like, we need a coach now.
Yeah. Well, we've got several other defensemen to talk about, and we're going to take a quick timeout, as Mill alluded to, and hear a word from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back on the other side of this break and talk a little bit more about some of the other guys.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as promised before the break, we wanted to dive back into discussing the Blackhawks defenseman from last season and maybe, I guess, kind of with an eye on what it's going to look like going forward. And one name that came up already, and I think there's going to be a healthy discussion in the Blackhawks front office and elsewhere related to his future with the team, is Caleb Jones, because he is 24, I believe, maybe 25. Cap friendly has him at 24, but that could be his start of the season age. He'll turn 25 in about 3 weeks on June 6th. So his contract is up at the end of this season. So he is now a restricted free agent. Only made $850,000. So it won't cost you a ton of money to bring him back, but his presence on the roster could take away a roster spot from a potential up-and-coming younger defenseman, which the Blackhawks seems like they have many of those guys and have for several years now. But I guess swinging around, we'll start with Shea again. Just Caleb Jones thoughts. Go ahead.
He's really bad, and he was only on the team to begin with to make Seth Jones happy, and I hope that Seth Jones was happy playing a season with his brother, because he shouldn't play another season with his brother in Chicago.
Tell me what you really think.
He's very inconsistent. When he's in the very few good games he had, he was good. But he's like the vast majority of the games, I'd probably say like 70 of them, were really bad.
Well, he only played 51. So,
okay. So 45 of those games were really bad games.
Okay.
You can't, even at 850K, you can't keep a defenseman around when he's going to get one of every nine games good.
Betsy, what about you?
So, you know, everybody knows I love microstats. If you look at his, he had, like, the Blackhawks in general weren't great at, like, zone exits, but Caleb Jones had the most botched zone exits on the team, and that's saying something. Like,
so that's basically defensive zone turnovers all day.
Yeah, like, he couldn't get out of the zone to save his life. And it was funny because we would comment on Erik Gustafsson doing that because he would fling the puck away sometimes. But Caleb Jones actually did worse than him. And I agree with Shay that there were bright spots. He did have games where he looked like an NHL player, but they were so far, like, in between these, like,
few and far between.
Yeah, like, what's up with that, you know? So my whole point for him is if they bring him back, it's not going to be the end of the world, but his leash needs to be very short. He had, like, the longest leash of any player. Like, even Gustafsson got sad, and I get that their age difference makes them different. They should be treated slightly differently that way, but neither one of them were helping the Hawks win most nights. So, yeah, just don't play him if he's playing bad. I don't, like... Just there were other players that played, if they played poorly, but it was like their first bad game in a while, they got, like, stapled to the press box. But Caleb Jones would have, like, 10 in a row. Like, that's weird. Don't do that anymore, please.
Yeah, I feel like with Caleb Jones, like, I'm not gonna lie, I do feel like he's coming back next season. And I think it's gonna be, if it's like his, you know, they tender him the qualifying offer as a restricted free agent, which, if math serves me correctly, he will be at $935,000. Well, it has to be at least $935,000 because he has to go up 10% from last year's contract, I believe is how that works. If he's, you know, a million or less than that, and it's one more year to see if maybe he puts it all together, I don't feel like that's the end of the world for 1 year for 1 million. If he gets anything more than that, then I get a little squeamish.
And if he's bad for 35 of the first 40 games, you need to switch to a younger defenseman.
I think that's, you know, part of the hopefully improvement in self-scouting of the organization and just the overall general better approach that we hope happens with the new regime in charge, is that they recognize when a guy isn't playing well at the NHL level, and then you either sit him down or send him down, you know, one of the two. Mill, what about you? Your Caleb Jones thoughts?
You know, I understand the idea of wanting to play with your brother. I mean, my brother is like my best friend, so I would advocate for him to be on my team. But I think that if that's the case, Seth needs to take Caleb and say, hey, we're going to go start working out and fixing some of your problems and have some responsibility, because he still has to be able to play if they want him around. Like, the Steelers have four sets of brothers now, but the coach came out.
Well, good for the Steelers.
And
won all your Super Bowls. I'm sorry.
No, but I'm just when jealous, they asked, Bill. Well, when they asked about him, hey, I mean, I wasn't alive for four of them, but when they asked about him, they go, well, yeah, like, we like these guys' character, but they can all play football. And this has to be the same thing with hockey. It's like, hey, you want these brothers, that's fine, but they have to be able to play. And so I think if they want to keep him, you know, they have to make some adjustments, because I think he sucks personally. And also, I think having the right coach, again, like, you can fix some things and prevent bad habits and shelter guys. But like Betsy brought up, you don't even have to look at the numbers to see how bad he is in his own end when trying to exit the zone. Like, he's a fucking turnover machine.
Yeah, and I felt like there was a game, I can't remember which one, but there's a game where he scored a goal, and he had, I think there's a really nice rush, or he just made a really nice play and ended up scoring a goal on it. And you're like, oh, all right, that was cool. Maybe he's, you know, starting to put some things together. And then later on in the game, he made an egregious defensive miscue
that led directly
to a goal against. And like, that is the Caleb Jones experience in a nutshell.
I think Caleb Jones, I don't think he's debunked of talent. Like, I'm sure at many levels of hockey, he probably was far superior to his peers athletically, but you have to be able to do things the right way in the NHL or you're not going to succeed. It was like watching some guy get assigned point guard who can't dribble the ball up court, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
so,
well, I mean, he and Seth, you know, their dad was in the NBA. So
that's true.
Pretty,
yeah. It was
that's
a Maverick,
pretty good
right?
genetics to start with right there.
Yeah. No kidding. But I'll say this. It's like, we already had Gustafsson. We didn't need another guy like that. It's like, oh, he can play offense. Yeah, but he doesn't.
Yeah. So I think, like, looking at the, just trying to look at the roster for next season and try and get an idea of who's going to be around. Like, obviously Seth Jones isn't going anywhere via his contract. Same for McCabe and Connor Murphy, who hopefully is back and healthy. Well, his 4-year contract extension kicks in at the start of next season. So Jones, McCabe, and Murphy, 3 for sure. And then outside of that, Riley Stillman's under contract, so he'll be back. So that's only 4 guys. Yeah, I know. So, and then this is where we get into the murkier part of the picture, because it feels like we've been saying for like 5 years now that the Hawks have all these defensive prospects who are on the way. Well, they're all in there. Like, the majority of them are like of legal drinking age now. So at some point you'd like to see them start making the leap to the NHL. This is more like the Ian Mitchells of the world and Wyatt Kalinick.
Nicholas Beaudin's.
Beaudin, which I don't know. We're going to get there in a second, but Nicholas Beaudin does not seem like he has a future in Chicago, to be as blunt as I can be. And then there's some of like the next wave that are right behind those guys, like that are a little bit younger, like the Isaac Phillips and Alex Vlasics of the world. And Alec Regula's in there as well. I think Regula's a little bit older, isn't he?
He's
21.
Yeah, he just turned 21.
He'll be 22.
Oh, he'll be 22 August. Soon. Yeah, it's
August. So I guess this is where the one thing I keep coming back to, and again, for those who are not of the analytics minded, sorry, but this is where we're rolling. The two players with the highest expected goal shares that played at least 200 minutes this season on the Blackhawks among defensemen, Alex Vlasic and Alec Regula. So, and they weren't the most sheltered minutes. Like neither one of Vlasic was about 50-50 split in terms of offensive zone starts. Regula was down at 40%. So I'm not going to tell you those guys are great, but it does feel like they should be in the mix for NHL spots next season. Right. I know you had thoughts on this.
Regula also played higher quality of comp than Vlasic tended to play mid to low, and Regula played in his second stint with the Hawks, played a lot in the upper echelon. Like for some reason, like they just kept putting him out there and his minutes went up for it too. So,
go ahead.
Yeah. If I was going to pick, I know we're going to talk about the Rockford Ice Hogs, but if I was going to pick 2 guys from the Ice Hogs that I think are probably should get the first NHL nods, it's going to be Ian Mitchell, and then it's going to be Regula. Ian Mitchell is a little bit older, and I think he's more well-rounded already. Regula might be more like skilled. I don't know how to I think they both have their things, but Vlasic is an interesting one though, because he's young.
He can't drink legally, I should say.
It does not mean he doesn't.
And he is very willowy.
He's Victor Svedberg.
Svedberg actually had some like mass to him. Vlasic's 6'6", 200 pounds. I saw Vlasic in person. He is very skinny.
Yeah, he's a little like, you feel like he might need to put on some cushion just from the like how rough the league is going to be to him.
Him and Kirby Doc need to get in that goddamn weight room
and get the goddamn buffet line
behind me, of course.
And also, yeah. After watching, I love Vlasic. I think everybody knows that I've always been a big fan of him. The only NCAA player that I liked better on defense is Kaiser, but he's even younger and not coming over yet. But
he's got moves though.
Yeah, I love him. Just like little fangirl right now. Okay. But Vlasic, he has some technical things that I think that being in the AHL would help him figure out speed wise. So I wouldn't mind him staying in the AHL for at least a little while, like let him get a taste of professional hockey a little bit down there. Because there are other guys who I think they should give a taste to before him, even though I think the world of Vlasic. I think he could be at least the second pair guy. I actually think he's so skinny.
It was a little weird that when they started the AHL playoffs, they did not send Vlasic down to play with them. Like they sent everybody else down there.
I don't think that's Vlasic. Weird. The blue line down there was very crowded already. Yeah. And who are you going to sit for him? Are you going to tell Kalyanuk, who's been playing the whole time and who was one of their top 4 guys, you're not going to play anymore? Are you going to tell, like, who are you going to tell that you're not going to sit? They already had to sit Beaudin because Stanton was better than him. I guess you could have sat both of them, but then you're playing somebody who's never played their system down there at all. And you do want them to try to win, you know, you don't want them to just go out.
Was Nick Modan bad or just like not as good?
Yeah. Well, really quickly on him, because he was a healthy scratch for, was it all three playoff games or the series against the Wolves, I should say.
He played in two, but he was scratched during Texas too. So Bogdan took a step back this year. It's just as he didn't even like stagnate. He took a step back.
Colleton broke him.
The first like 10 or so games, you could tell they wanted Bogdan and Mitchell maybe to be the top pair. So they were rotating that top four a little bit, trying to figure out, but Bogdan and Mitchell were together and they didn't look great together. And Bogdan didn't look awesome. You know, one of the things that was so good about him in the past was like how poised he always is and how he doesn't really make mental mistakes.
Right.
And he made a lot of like irregular mistakes for him, like things that he had never done before. It was like he was in his head too much or something. And then he just never picked it up pretty much all season. He got a little bit better, like a little bit better towards the end. He was showing up on the scorecard for positive things, not just points, but other things. But everything just looked out of sorts for him. He wasn't as good with one of the things he's always been good at is in transition, being able to get the puck out smartly. Not great at that this season. He was always pretty good at puck retrievals, not overly physical because he's not a big guy, but he could always get the puck usually through stick work. Not very good at that this year. His decision making, you could see he was like overthinking things through the neutral zone too. Like it just, Ian Mitchell went into last season and he had some moments where it looked kind of like he was going through that phase too. And then this year he just was really good at everything. Like he took strides to me. Bogdan did the opposite.
It seems like with Bogdan taking that step back, like there's, and now that you add Vlasic and Regula into the picture, and then, you know, you look too far down the pipeline, you know, Isaac Phillips is playing in the AHL. And Nolan Allen has a professional contract, and there's Jakob Galvis as well. So there's all these guys that seem like they might be slipping ahead of him on the depth chart that, like, if he doesn't show up at the next training camp and have a really good one, like, he might not have a future in Chicago. And it seems like that's the way it's trending right now.
Yeah, it's crazy because he's only 22. He's going to be 23 soon, but so that seems like, oh, you're giving up on him kind of young. And it could have just been a one-off. He could have turned it back around because I think arguably he was maybe the best defender last season for Rockford, especially down the stretch. And then this year he slowly moved his way down the depth chart and then got scratched in favor of Stanton in the playoff, in the Texas series. And then they lost that first game and they put him back in there and he just didn't make any impact at all.
Well, I guess that'll be one name we have to watch when we get to September. Before we dive in completely to a quick recap with the Ice Hogs, any other defensemen that any of you three had thoughts on that we missed? I think we got all the names off that all the names are off my list.
Yeah, I think we're good. Also, Texas Stars, how original. But yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of in agreement that like, it's like, we know who's good and who's not as far as the established players, and here's to hoping for the young guys.
I think, again, I feel like I've been saying it for several years now, but it's like at some point, would like to see some of the young defensemen show up at the NHL level and grab a spot and not let it go. I guess that's the finger crossed for next season, because that's going to be one of the biggest things they need is they need some of their own prospects to develop. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, get Connor Bedard, cool, but you also need a blue line. Ask Connor McDavid, who hasn't really had much of a blue line his entire career and hasn't really won anything because of that. So while we're here on the Rockford IceHogs topic, they just got swept by the Chicago Wolves in three games of a five-game series. So good for the Wolves, I guess. Betsy, I know you had the most attention out of this group geared towards that. So do you have a quick post-mortem on that series for us?
I guess I wrote my preview article too positively because I was excited.
Yeah, you convinced Mill that they were going to win.
Okay.
We're lucky I can't bet on the A's, so.
So, I had high hopes that they could win a game or two. I didn't know if they could win. I know they did win 8 of the 12 against them during the regular season, but we all know that regular season and the playoffs are completely different beasts. The Wolves are a much older, more experienced team. The Ice Hogs were definitely prospect heavy. They did have some older guys like Kirsch Gabriel jumped on there later and Dylan McLaughlin, but all of their defensemen, except for Stanton, who rotated in, and I'm blanking on the other one, but were almost all, you know, 25, 24 or younger. Phillips is only just turned 20. Regula turned 21 right before the season, that kind of stuff. And then all of the high scorers were young guys other than Brett Conley. So it was young versus very experienced, older, predominantly AHL guys, but there were also some former NHL guys like Panic and Levo on there.
By the way, Richard Panic, I believe, had his pocket picked by Lucas Reichel.
There was some hope that they could do well. Soderblom had a bad first game, and then the Wolves figured out very quickly how to, if they just shut down Reichel's line, there's no depth.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, so they, if you watched the games, they just like tag teamed Reichel the whole time, and it did give Reichel some fits. Reichel played probably his worst defensively in that series than I've seen him all season. He still did create. He and Tepley still had probably the best chances, but they didn't have her full line because they put another AHL guy got moved up that was normally on the third line. Just didn't click with them very well.
Was it the Dudowicz or something like that? Or there's some guys got a really weird name.
Starts with
way too many consonants.
Yeah, but either way, they'd been playing with, I think they probably should have moved Slavin up there at one point, but they didn't. Slavin was with Hardman and Barrett most of the time. And they got one goal. Barrett got a goal, which was actually a very pretty shot. But other than that, the only offense they got other than that were from defensemen, from Regula and Ian Mitchell, which were both almost by themselves. You know, like, and that's how it had to happen. It almost had to be singular efforts. Reichel's goal was almost a singular effort. You know, like, the Wolves were just much better than them. And I feel bad for giving people false hope, but
just by people, you mean me.
Yeah.
My mill. But I don't think anybody should look at it as a disappointment. Like, that's what I tried to write in my article today. It wasn't unexpected. They overperformed all season. Yeah. Considering how absolutely shallow they were at forward and how young their defenders were.
And I think the other point to understand as it relates to the Chicago Wolves is that they are, as a organization, they are much more focused on winning at the AHL level because they feel like they need to win at the AHL level to sell tickets. It seems like, because they're advertising all over town. Like, I feel like there's some minor league teams that have NHL affiliations that we're just going to play who you send us. And if we win, cool, if not, oh, well. The Chicago Wolves seem like we're going to win and we're going to sign. Steve Maltese is going to be a team legend for 10 years, who I think he retired in like 2008, but they get like career AHL guys to come there and win because they need to win to sell tickets.
Yeah. Well, they used to sell more tickets than the Hawks though.
Yeah. Back in the day.
And, I'm not joking.
And might get there again, the way things are going.
You guys, there was a game in like 05 or 06, I think, like when Boston came and they announced the crowd as 10,000 at the United Center and people were losing their minds.
Yeah. I remember correctly, Shay, you had some questions you wanted to ask Betsy related to this topic. So go right ahead.
Sure.
So to clarify the Wolves thing, a lot of teams that like accept whoever you send to them and are not like focused on tickets are so because they're owned by their NHL affiliate, like the Ice Hogs.
Yes.
So Wolves have never been owned by their affiliate. And in fact, I think they're the team whose affiliation has changed to the most over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think they started in the IHL, which doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, and then they were the Blues, and then they were Golden Knights.
Yeah, then they went all
the Blues, I think, again, and then now they're the Carolina.
Yeah, they toured the
NHL. And Vancouver, I think, too.
Yeah, I think Seattle has players with the Wolves.
Every team the Hawks have had a huge rivalry with, the Wolves had their team.
There was no Red Wings, but they did have Chelios.
Yeah, cool.
At 50 years old or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. The Wolves are a wild team. Anyway, what do you think of the coaching of the Ice Hawks? Do you think that that's something that should continue next year? Like, do you think that that coaching staff, what you've seen of them, is good enough to help develop the players?
Well, so they, like the Blackhawks, are a porous team. They allow a lot of shots against. Söderblom faced more shots than any other goalie that played a certain, like, 30 games or more. He was, like, at the top of that. And then in the playoffs, just in those, he, even though he got pulled in those three games he played, he faced the most shots. He faced 40 and 49 shots in the last two games. Like, that's ridiculous. And that was a season long trend. So I don't know, because they're still not a very good possession team down there, but
okay.
I will say their breakouts are better. They do a better job of clearing up mistakes in front. Like, their defenders were very good at letting the other team shoot and then getting out of the zone and then getting the other way. It's part of why the defenders had as many points as they did. In the actual Chicago games during the regular season, the defensemen factored into like 90% of the goals. In like a big way, and a lot of primary assists, but like, they're the only reason that they got as many points as they did against them. And in the playoffs, obviously, they just shut that down and it killed them. But so in that regard, yes, if they could figure out how to tweak, like, somebody has to teach this organization to possess again, right?
Yeah.
I will say.
So what you're saying is that the head coach who was Derek King's assistant before this season should probably go back to being the next head coach's assistant.
Maybe I would like, I wonder if like they were trying to make it similar to the way that the Hawks were playing. That's my only.
That's actually what I was going to bring up, is that I think famously for like,
I have a complaint about this as well.
Was that like the Hawks were playing one system and the AHL team was playing a different system. And
what the
seems
fuck
to make no sense. Like,
no,
like, that's another thing, like, going forward, like, if you could get the entire organization playing a similar style of hockey. I know the AHL is a little bit more of a dump and chase, grind it out type of game, but there's still some like basic tenets of like defensive coverage and stuff that should be uniform across all levels of hockey. And that's how you develop players.
So I think the tweaks that were slightly, so I think that the systems were very similar, but the tweaks that Sorsen made in the AHL was on the blue line. And part of that is because that blue line down there is so mobile versus the one in Chicago, which is not.
Yeah.
You know,
the one coach, like, there was an article that just was up at the Athletic. My Powers wrote a big piece on Michael Tepley. And if you read in the article, it talks about Peter Aubrey's his name. He's been the goalie coach in Rockford forever, it seems. Mm-hmm. And Aubrey, like, I think they paired Aubrey up with Tepley, and it seemed like over the second half of the season, Tepley got a lot better. Now, I know, Betsy, you've written a few times, mentioned that part of that could just be that he was playing with Lucas Reichel, might have been part of it, the reason for that. Or maybe Tepley figured something out and he and Reichel together brought the best out of each other. So, like, that, I guess that's something we'll only be able to tell in the future. But like, there's a fair amount of success stories for goalies that have gone through Rockford. So I don't know if they changed the entire coaching staff, what they're going to do with that, but it seems like Peter Aubrey has a pretty good reputation for working with players and getting the best out of players. So that's one name I would throw out, is maybe keep him around.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, because I think Sorensen, I think that's his name. I'm blanking.
Anders Sorensen.
Yeah. he could probably, if they got a better coach up above, could implement that in the AHL with better tweaks. Like I said, the tweaks that he did make to the defenders did help Rockford down the line. And Tepley is an interesting one to look out for, because I don't know if it was Reichel was what they tweaked, or if he really just needed to play with better players, because they had him with grinders. And so it's not his style.
So it's Michael Strome. Is that what you're telling me? It sounds like the Dylan Strome case, but just in the AHL.
Yeah, it was. And the only reason they even moved him up is because Slavin went to the top, and then Connolly was injured for a second, so he moved up to Reichel, and they connected instantly. So I don't even know if they would have made that choice if there hadn't been injuries. So,
okay. That was going to be my next question. What do you think of the less known names? Like you've mentioned Pepley and Barrett and all these guys who might be important depth down the road for the Blackhawks.
Yeah. I think Tepley could be something. I like him a lot. He's got decent size. He's got good moves. Interestingly, he's got a good shot, but he's actually a better playmaker. And that's part of why Reichel was scoring more goals, is because they balanced each other out really well. And he wasn't afraid to do grunt work if he needed to. So I liked him. Defensively, he could be a little bit better, but that's true of most players. I actually really liked Hardman this year. We've already talked about him a lot. Barrett did not have a great season. He didn't play with the best players though, but he also did not. When he was with Reichel, didn't make the most of it. Altie Barmakian, when he played with Reichel, did make the most of it, but still was under half a point per game. I think he could be a pretty good grinder. He's a very hard worker, maybe a third liner if he could get his scoring touch up a little bit. And that might be it. Like, that's the problem down there.
Yeah.
So Dave's guy, Slavin, is not great.
Oh, Slavin.
He's in like fourth line center.
I think Slavin could be the type of fourth liner that you like teams really need, but he needs to be developed into that. Because I think he naturally is the best defensive forward that they had down there under 25. Yeah.
Okay. So Carpenter.
Yeah. So I think this came up at some point during the season that like a lot of these guys, there are guys that seem like they could be NHLers in the future, but the only one that might crack the top six is Lucas Reichel, right? Like that's still there. It's still really hard to see any of these guys being like, all these other names top out as like third liners at the most.
I think, okay, so Tepley, I think, could be a second liner if what we saw at the end of this year can translate farther, because he was going at a 0.7 PPG for the last like little while. And even when Reichel was down with injury, he was still producing. So it just depends on how well he works out. The reason they signed him is because he had over a point per G in the WHL the year before that. So he was like Kurashev before Kurashev was similar players to me, that both of them could be second liners if they hit their potential, but it just depends on if they can.
Cause I think this comes back to the point, the thing I said in the first half of the pod about how, like, because the Hawks aren't in the playoffs, you don't have the guys that are like have big performances in the playoffs and become like team legends. So those are also the type of guys that like you develop in your farm system. They play well during the regular season and then they just have a night in the playoffs and become those stars. But it feels like the Hawks haven't even had any young forwards that have played well enough played through Rockford and developed and got to the NHL level and then got to a position where maybe they could do something in the postseason. Like, you know, the next wave of the Versteegs and the Bickles and the Bolins and all those guys, they haven't done that forever. So
correct.
And which is the whole problem here. So hopefully Lucas Reichel's good. And then there's all these other names behind them and we'll see where they go. There's not a ton there, so hopefully in the future drafts they start stockpiling more players like that. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for the hockey discussion on this episode. We can talk about goalies next week. There's not too much to discuss there. But as the internet's best food-themed hockey podcast, we haven't done some food takes in a while. We've been complaining about the Blackhawks too much. So Betsy recently had an experience that is going to actually, Betsy, is you just play this portion back for your friend and then help her make the decision. Help whoever is making the decision on this topic. Just play this for them. And then we'll make the decision for him. So can you lay out the problem here for us?
So I have a friend and I'm in her bridal shower. So she's getting married in August. So we're doing all the, let's pick our dresses and all that stuff. But of course the best part is
I'm thrilled. I know.
Well, she's doing two different ceremonies because she's Indian. So she's doing like a traditional Hindu wedding ceremony and then a Western one. So the Western one will have cake. So that's the best part of being in the part of that bridal shower is you could go cake testing. So
I'm not gonna lie, I'd almost be intrigued by the food in the other one just because it would be probably a lot of different things than I'm have had at the weddings I've been to.
Oh, I hope it's I love Indian food. So I'll be like, yes. And her mom's cooking is great too. So I'm assuming her mom and her dad are helping plan it a little bit. So I'm assuming they're going to help with food. Mm. And so I'm like, I will trust everything that you select. But the cake part is, you know, they're trying to figure out what they want and everything like that. And her soon to be husband is, gluten-free. He can't eat gluten. So you have to go to certain places and look at that. So we tried, I went with them to their second shop and they tried four gluten-free, cake samplers. And I honestly could not tell they were gluten-free. I could tell which one was vegan.
I once got gluten-free donuts from a place, I have a brother who was gluten intolerant. So, the difference between gluten and gluten-free food, I don't know what it is, but I don't taste it. So yeah, that's good.
They were all delicious, but we had four different types and the selections were a vanilla with strawberry filling, cake with vanilla icing, a lemon with lemon icing. So lemon on lemon, a chocolate with chocolate icing, chocolate on chocolate. And then finally red velvet. And so good, all of them. The chocolate was actually the vegan one, which is why I could. I had the red velvet first and then the chocolate, and I thought for sure that those would be my two favorites, but the chocolate actually ended up being the last. But the interesting dilemma was that we ranked them, and the aggregate favorite was red velvet, as it should be. Yes. But it was not, I think, one of the ones they're going to select, which was interesting. The lemon and the strawberry were the two, I think, that they were trying to decide on. And maybe they're going with the lemon one. The lemon one was very good. It was my third favorite, but that was just because the other two, strawberry was better. But what, out of those four, what would your guys, you can probably guess what they're like, what they taste like. You probably have.
Okay. I think we should, the three of us should make our rankings. I think you kind of did yours there, Betsy, but we'll let you re-rank again at the end just in case. Yeah. So Shay and Mill, I don't know if you two are ready. Well, obviously we didn't taste these, so we don't know what they are. We're just going off of description, but yes. Shay, it sounds like you're ready to rank them. So go ahead.
Yeah. Bottom is vegan chocolate. Come on now.
Now, is that because it's vegan or is that because
it's because I've been vegan and I know what vegan desserts taste like and no, thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's, for the sake of argument, let's take away the vegan label and let's just pretend it was chocolate on chocolate, like chocolate cake, chocolate icing.
Yeah. I will say that it still tasted very good, but I could tell that it was vegan. Like, yeah. So let's, it's not that it was bad. It just, and in fact, like I said, I had it second and I was like, oh, I also don't like chocolate on chocolate as much as I like it to be a contrasting icing.
Yeah.
It's just my...
All right, Shay, go ahead. Take another swing at that.
Okay. So is it just like a generic chocolate cake or are we going restaurant specific? Because if we're going restaurant specific, there's a very specific chocolate cake that may feature at my wedding.
No, just a regular, average, make these all average
chocolate.
Are you talking about Portillo's chocolate cake? Is that what's going on? Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's not that good.
Okay. So still, okay. Lemon. I love lemon. Do I love it in cake as much? Or is it a pie filling? It's a pie filling. So lemon on bottom, strawberry, no, chocolate third, strawberry second, and then, yeah, red velvet.
Mill, what about you?
I believe the Shay and I have the same list, which doesn't surprise me because we like a lot of the same foods, especially like desserts and stuff. Because red velvet to me is a clear cut winner. Red velvet just kicks ass.
Yeah.
In a cake, I think the strawberry filling would put it over the chocolate just because it's got some kind of variation. And then I'm just not a big lemon cake person. You know, it's kind of like it's okay.
Okay. Well, because I've similar to the other two. I have lemon at the bottom. I've got the red velvet on top. And I think I'm going to do the chocolate on chocolate in the two spot. And I'll do the vanilla and strawberry at number three. And then Betsy, what was your?
So I had the chocolate on the bottom. Then I had the lemon. Then I had strawberry. And then red velvet was obviously the clear.
Now, if it was like not the vegan chocolate, would that have affected your decision?
I don't actually think so. Because like I said, I don't. Okay. If it had been chocolate with a different vanilla, like it had vanilla icing or some other icing on top, maybe it would be different. But that's just too much chocolate to me. I like chocolate, but I don't. Because red velvet is essentially chocolate cake, but with cream cheese.
That's why it's awesome.
Exactly.
I agree with Betsy 100%. I think chocolate is actually kind of better in like a marble cake.
Yeah, oh, I love marble cake. Oh gosh, yes, marble cake with a like any backwards of that combination is
good. Unless it's a German chocolate.
I will. It was. I will say that I was surprised at how much I liked the lemon because I agree with Shay that lemon I like in pies and like stuff like that. I like fruit pies a lot. And the strawberry was just better to me. But I like strawberry better than lemons. So,
yeah.
So I have a question. I don't know if we've actually discussed this topic before, so I'm intrigued if this is a regional thing. Cause I'm going to go and think that Betsy, do you know what atomic cake is?
Atomic? No, I don't think so.
It's atomic cake.
Atomic cake. Is that the one? No, I don't think so.
All right, because
atomic.
My birthday was last week, and I was asked what type of cake we wanted. It's me and my twin, so obviously.
No, we have talked about this because this is the cake that has like strawberries in the middle of it.
Oh, right? It's got everything. We've talked about all these different flavors. Like, what if you just put all of them into one cake? It doesn't have red velvet, but like, if there's a banana at the bottom. It's like banana and then it's banana cake and then like a banana filling and then like I think it's pound cake and then strawberries and then whipped cream and then chocolate cake and then vanilla frosting on top of all of that. And let me tell you, folks, it was heavenly.
Banana cake is the only thing I like better than red velvet, I think.
So, yeah, I didn't know if that was I just put it in our Slack discussion so you guys can all see it, but that's my answer as a wedding. Just give me that. Just give
did
me
you come to that cake. Decision with your sibling?
I think I came to that decision and threw it to him and he agreed with me immediately. So yes.
Well, I hope what they do, because they were talking about like three layers and maybe doing different flavors for each layer would be like a cool compromise. I appreciate that their my friend's approach to the cake was, you know, needs to look good, but I really actually just want it to taste good.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of wedding cakes do not taste good because they have to be a little bit denser to hold up the weight.
Oh. Yeah, some of them are kind of bad, actually.
Yeah, they were even talking about, you know, they do the fake. When we were going over there, we were talking about how you can do like essentially a cake made out of styrofoam that has one section that can be cut out that's tasteable, and then you have sheet cake for everybody else.
Might as well just make a beer cake at that point.
But I mean, it's just, it's all about the production, and that's not what she wanted to do. She wanted to have like a real cake that could be eaten, which I appreciate as somebody.
I tell you, you know, cake. And the other thing, my main thought right now is congratulations to the person who was marrying that person, because that is the proper approach for this entire situation.
I mean, he's so very lucky. She's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, very, very well done. Good job. Good job on him. But the other thing with the red velvet, it is great, but I feel like the scarcity of it is kind of the key. Like, I feel like you don't get a lot of red velvet in a lot of places. So And I feel like if you had too much of it, it might ruin it. So I'm
gonna go ahead and tell you that red velvet is very popular in the South.
Is it? Really?
I think I don't eat cake enough. Like for me personally, I don't eat cake that often, so it works out well.
Where do you eat cake outside of like birthday parties and family holiday gatherings?
We get cupcakes at work all the time, so it's not like cake, but there's a bunch of different cupcake places around here that do like little ones and big ones, and then they give you essentially a sheet that's like, these are what you're eating, because you get an assortment, and the red velvet ones are always like, go away, I need to grab that.
Gone immediately, yeah. That's when you got to beat everyone else to the office, or to the break room.
I think the cream cheese style frosting or icing really helps too.
I'm within, like, as soon as we're done here, I'm going to go eat dinner, and it's really tempting to like go to the nearest store and find a place.
You know what? I actually do have a cake in the fridge, so I might ruin my dinner because we have a Costco white cake, like the layered one with the vanilla mousse in the inside. Costco is actually well done. Like they do a good job when they do stuff like that.
And I was supposed to go to Costco after dinner. Cool. Oh, this is just all bad for me, guys.
I was going to say, I can name like 5 cupcake places off the top of my head that I love all of their red velvet cupcakes there. The last wedding I went to, they had cupcakes as their, instead of having, like they had, I think a cake, somebody got them a cake, but I don't know if anybody ate that cake really. It was the cupcakes that was the best part. And interestingly, they didn't have red velvet there, but they did have Oreo kind. And I didn't think I was going to like it. I like Oreos. Okay. But not like the best. And they were easily the best cupcake.
Well, I was gonna kind of related to that, Betsy. The last wedding I attended was at a Mexican restaurant, and they had churros. I don't even think there was cake. I think it was just churros, and they were there was red velvet ones, there were Oreo ones, there were cereal themed ones, like just churros everywhere. I was once I got labeled with the nickname Churro Man because we were at a White Sox game and some drunk Twins fan, he called me Churro Man as an insult. So going to a wedding, she just was like, why don't you just sit there and eat your churro, Churro Man? I was like, okay, I will.
Creative.
She was very drunk. I'm just going to throw it out there. If you're getting married at a Mexican restaurant, invest in some churros instead of cake. It's not a bad approach.
Hey, if I can find a wife that wants to get married at a Mexican restaurant, I'm gonna ask her to marry me right away. Because like, I'm all about Mexican food. So
yeah. On a list of quality food at a wedding, that was high on the list. Before I forget, Shay, I thought you had something you were gonna chime in with.
Just a reminder that pie remains better than cake. Sort of universally.
Shay off the top rope.
just a fact of life is that anything cake can do, pie can do better.
They just reversed your cake take into a sunset flip. I kind of don't disagree with that, only because I think if you offered me cake or pie as a dessert, generally I think I'd go pie, especially with ice cream on top.
Yeah. Well, no, but all right. Then that's a weakness of pie if it needs ice cream on top to make it that.
Because I like ice cream and cake too.
Yeah, exactly. You can add ice cream to cake too and make it improves cake as well.
It's better with pie.
Yeah. It's better with ice cream with a warm pie. Like cake is usually.
Yeah, even if you put ice cream with warm cake.
Or if you put ice cream with a non-warm pie, it's still better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would just say like, because I think the attraction to pie is the crust versus the filling has more contrast, whereas like cake is so sweet sometimes with the icing and the inside that it can be a bit much.
Okay.
And then sometimes there's too much icing. Like what's up with that?
What's up with that?
Right. Well, I think sometimes with pie, there's too much crust. I think if you ruin the crust of the pie, like it ruins the whole thing. Like,
go ahead.
I'm done. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you guys eat, we're in the cake form and cupcakes came up a second ago. I was watching TikTok recently, something on TikTok. Somebody was like, literally, I can't even remember which actress it was, but people were like on it going, oh my God, that's brilliant. It was Anne Hathaway, because there were people going, she learned that in princess school. And it was like, what? She made her cupcake into a sandwich, as lots of people do. But yeah.
What?
That's a really common thing, right? Yeah, I wasn't like...
You cut it in half and like take the bottom on top and smash it down. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want icing all over your face.
So it's basically like a moon pie.
Yeah, exactly. That's I'm pretty sure that's the exact word that Anne Hathaway used in the thing.
Shout out Eric Von Detten, by the way.
There were a ton of people in the comments going, she learned that in Princess. And I was like, what?
Learned it in Princess School. What? There's
the Princess Diary. You know, and I get it.
That's because TikTok is full of 12-year-olds that don't know any better.
I just was like, that's the only way to eat a cupcake.
wait, Mill, why did is she married to Eric Von Detten?
No, he's in that movie.
Okay.
That's the only thing I remember seeing that when it came out like 20 years ago.
Big upgrade for Brink, Adam.
Yeah, I was like, shout out Brink.
By the way, the fact that the Flyers have that new draft pick named Brink that they signed, and I'm still been yelling at all the Broad Street Hockey people for not using Brink gifts more often, but that's a totally random.
That's a generational thing, yeah. I think
many of them are the same age I am.
Well, right, so they should be ashamed of themselves.
They should know, but they're not listening anyway, so whatever. All right. Well, I think we've run we're brought all the way back to 90s Disney movies. So I think that means it's about time to wrap this episode up. Any final thoughts on the Blackhawks or pie or cake or the Panthers and Lightning game that just started?
Yeah, there's live betting odds for anybody interested. Otherwise, I'll shut the hell up.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And now a word from our sponsors.
Yeah. DraftKings sponsor us more. They paid us
absolutely
more.
Not. I'm so fucking sick of betting ads. This is the new hill I'm going to die on.
I hit a four-leg parlay the other day, and I immediately deposited the money and ordered a pizza. Like, it's really nice when there's sports on all day.
I was going to ask before we all head out, how many did you guys miss on in your bracket from the first round? I missed.
Thank you for reminding me to check the brackets. I think I was doing pretty good shape. I
didn't get any games right, but I only missed on three, which
I missed three as well. I had the Kings and Oilers going seven, but I had Kings. I had Wild because wishful thinking, and I had Pittsburgh because I didn't expect them to all get killed.
Yeah, we had almost the exact same bracket. The only difference is I had Toronto. I thought they were just going to make it past the first round, and this year would be the year they were disappointed in the second round.
I've learned my lesson with that. Well, they didn't even play bad. They just, I mean, Tampa is just a hell of a team.
Yeah, they just ran into a machine. I have Tampa winning the cup again, which I was getting very worried that that wasn't going to happen. So right now there's a solo leader. It's Jaws with about five Z's. They've got 83 points. Total possible is 383. Their championship pick is the Carolina Hurricanes. And so I believe that they are, they're the current leader and have the highest possible total of points. So congratulations to them. I'm sure they're an avid listener. At least I hope they are.
You mean it's not Steve?
It is not Steve. I'm starting to scroll here to see if I see some familiar names, and feel free to shout if I'm.
Oh, ready. I'm very Rays is 15th.
I'm 59th. I'm at 50 points. I still have a possible 350.
I have 50 points too, so we're tied.
Where am I?
How many points do you have?
I don't know.
Mill, you're also in 50th.
Oh.
You're in 50th. You're in 50th. I'm 59th. Betsy's 59th. Shay, you're at 70th.
God damn, woo! Panarin. Panarin scored that fucking goal after having two big penalties in a game seven. That motherfucker, just to spite me.
I don't recognize any of the people at the top, but that doesn't mean.
Yeah.
Except for Braves.
I put it out on Twitter. There's a few names in there I remember from comments and otherwise. But we'll see what happens when we get to the end. Yeah, I missed.
Oh, Panthers scored.
I don't have them winning, but I messed up on the Blues but I had Calgary in seven. I had Edmonton in seven. Oh man, I wasn't totally an idiot.
No, you're good. I think the Blues thing, we all just were like, fuck them.
That's entirely what that was.
Do you know what's interesting about Toronto and bringing it to the Blues is that there was like years that they were like, maybe the Blues or the Wild were actually really good teams, but they always ran into the Blackhawks or the Kings. And I don't know if that's Toronto now. They just ran into like the team that could win, but.
Yeah, every year these quote unquote experts, it's going to be the Bruins and the Blues. And then it finally happened one year and I was like, fuck, this stink. And then the one time I root for Boston since 2011 and they blow it.
Well, somebody also said the Hawks were Stanley Cup contenders after the Seth Jones trade. So,
me?
No, it was nobody that works at this site.
I didn't overreact. Yeah, I know. I didn't overreact that much.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. Thanks to all the line mates for hanging out once again this evening. Mills on Twitter at Mill182. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. Betsy is not on Twitter, but you can find her at SecondCityHockey.com under the name LBR, where you can find all of our articles and playoff game threads, which I think, now that I think about it, I forgot to post the one for today. So oops on that. Minus one for me. I'm on Twitter at TMelt57. The main account is at 2NDCityHockey. And just keep following along. We got a few more, definitely a few more season recap episodes to do. We're going to put together a mailbag at some point because we should. And I've been meaning to do that episode. So we'll get one of those going soon. And then, I don't know, we'll see where the rest of the offseason takes us. But we'll be back next week, probably talking about some goalies and some other things, and maybe even some food as well, as is our want. So we'll talk to you then, I guess. Yep. See you then.